This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Hi, welcome to Health Check. I'm Joyce Teo, a senior health correspondent with The Straits Times. Today, we are taking a step into the future to look at digital therapeutics, or DTX, which are evidence-based digital solutions for the prevention, management, or treatment of a medical disorder or disease. But what exactly are these? Where can they be applied, and just how effective are they? My guest today is Professor Dean Ho, the director of the Institute for Digital Medicine at the National University of Singapore Yong Lu Lin School of Medicine and the head of the Biomedical Engineering Department at NUS. He's just written a book on DTX with two other researchers, Mr. Yuan Sepanel and Dr. Agata Blasiak from the Institute. The book is titled Medicine Without Meds, Revolutionizing Healthcare with Digital Solutions. Prof Ho said the book offers a roadmap on how digital innovation can be developed and implemented effectively to serve patients. So let's find out more from him. Hi, Prof Ho. Congratulations on the launch of your book, and thanks for coming down to the studio to talk to us about DTX.
Thank you so much for having me.
So it's a big topic, right? Can you start by describing it to us very simply?
Sure. Digital therapeutics refers to the use of software as the actual treatment. This type of software can be a mobile app. It can be run on a desktop. And since it's treatment, it can address various conditions, ranging from addressing mental health to encouraging healthier lifestyle, all the way to looking at other conditions such as asthma, diabetes, heart disease, so on and so forth. They're based off of trials run with patients or users to achieve certain outcomes to prove that they actually work.
Right. So these are actually considered treatments that are prescribed by the doctor.
That's actually what's quite interesting. Indeed, if you look at some of the most recent examples in the United States, there's actually a video game that can be prescribed by doctors for children and adults with ADHD. It made big news because the headline was now doctors can prescribe video games. And this technology is based off of human trials that validated its efficacy.
Right. Does it have to be prescribed by a doctor?
Great question. In fact, given kind of the progress and the promise and the results that have been seen, some of these innovations, including the one I just described, now is also OTC, over the counter, because follow-on evidence has shown that in addition to kind of prescription-driven over-the-counter use can have pronounced benefit to users as well. And so it's nice to see this evolution of both kind of prescription-driven, over-the-counter-driven, but all evidence-backed.
Okay, just to understand it a little better, because when the doctor actually prescribes something to you, right, and they will tell you, okay, this is for 10 sessions and you have to use it for how long? But if you actually get it yourself, how would you know, right?
Yes, I think first of all, since we're looking at digital therapeutics, I think sometimes the community might think that digital therapeutics is the use of digital technology to develop new drugs. Again, to reiterate, this is actually the use of software as the treatment. I think one of the core foundations here is that the risk is probably not as high as, say, taking a pill in terms of safety and toxicity, et cetera. And so I think when we look at the evolution of these digital therapies, in the beginning, as they're first deployed into the community, prescription-driven, they kind of see the response. There's little to no evidence of adverse reactions, for example, because it's not a pill. And over time, as more data and more evidence is generated, they can then transition towards over-the-counter use, which in some cases may mimic some of the existing pill-based medicines that we see, where after a substantial amount of time has passed and the community's had the chance to really observe how they've performed in the community, you can see this kind of transition.
So, Prof, can you give us an example of a DTX being used in Singapore?
Yes. So one of our stakeholders in the community, AVICE, is a technology that's being used to address asthma. And so when we think about the challenges of managing asthma, the ability to stay on the regimens that doctors prescribe can be a challenge. Other challenges facing patients include even the patient being aware of how they're doing, right? Are they potentially about to have an asthma attack? And so this company has developed a suite. There's the software, there's kind of a wearable, it's like a wearable stethoscope. And the stethoscope, if you kind of put yourself in the shoes of a user, allows them to understand heart rate, right? Their respiratory function, their breathing function. And as they engage with the software can also tell them, hey, by the way, over the past week, how many doses of medicine have you missed? How are you doing with regards to sticking with the treatment plan that you've been assigned? By the way, do you need to talk to a doctor right now? Do you have questions? We take a pill, we kind of move on with our day. But when you have a digital ecosystem around you, you can actually see how you are responding. You can see your performance over time. I think it's quite empowering for a lot of users out there to stick with plans and regimens because they know what are they missing, what are they not missing. The user is getting information back that will then drive them to push for better outcomes for themselves. Sometimes digital therapy can be standalone, but in other cases, digital therapy does need to complement traditional therapies.
Right. So what are the conditions that are likely to benefit most from DTX as a standalone treatment?
I think one area to look at is certainly mental health. There are really promising companies exploring this space right now. One of them is called Quilt, which is being explored here and in collaboration with Clavist Bio. And Quilt is an experience where if a user undertakes healthy lifestyle habits, such as going outside for a specific amount of time, maybe exercising, maybe being productive in certain types of categories, they will get almost like tokens. And these tokens allow them to buy certain games, even some of these classic games that they want. It really learns what motivates users to keep engaging in healthier habits. And so that's an exciting platform that we've had a chance to take a look at as well. Even our own team has partnered with social enterprises, one named Asset, which is using digital peer support, where users can engage with befrienders to help kind of steward them forward with digital letter writing to improve anxiety and depressive symptoms as well.
I see. So because, you know, there are like all these online companies as well for mental health. That's DTX, isn't it?
That's a great question. I think that the space is certainly getting larger and larger over time. I think what's important to note is that the broader wellness community, because it's digital, there can be rapid release of a lot of solutions out there. Programming and building a solution is going to be faster than, say, designing a new drug and sending that drug through clinical trials. I think the big differentiator for digital health as a whole, as a field, is that there have been some studies run not too long ago showing that there are applications in digital health that maybe don't have as much peer-reviewed evidence as we could have as a field. And we get it. It's an exciting field. Building new apps, building new software, building new games, it can be really important to give different options for users. But what's critical in the end is the evidence. And it's going to become increasingly important to build evidence, to show validation, and to show quantifiable outcomes where they can maybe outperform standard care, where there's proof that they actually help the users. And our group has actually done some reviews, some systematic reviews to help us understand which solutions out there are taking that path. I think now for the field, it's about building more. And what I think is important is that the ecosystem matters. If somebody builds a great app and has the evidence, then we have to think about, is this sustainable? Will people continue to use this? Because we have to remember, if we take a pill, it takes 10 seconds, 5 seconds, we move on. But for some of these apps, you need to spend maybe 10 to 20 minutes a day for 5 days a week, as an example. How do we incentivize users to stick with it? How is the ecosystem supporting them? How are the caregivers supporting them?
Let's say a mobile game treatment, you know, you recommend that it should be used for 30 minutes a day, perhaps for like maybe 20 days. And what happens if the person plays for like 60 minutes a day for like maybe 5 days? I mean,
yes, that's a great question. That's a matter of dose. And this would be a less dangerous equivalent potentially of someone took too much of this medicine, right? At the same time, when we think about what if they stop using it, right? I think that's the question of how do we ensure that there's the proper resources put in place to make sure adherence is top of mind. And this is actually a focus. When we wrote our book, our whole concept was, if we build innovations around the user, if we understand what motivates the user, but we firmly note that users change over time. Their doses can change over time. The difficulty levels they need change over time, but their preferences change over time. We need to make sure that we don't treat each person as a snapshot and say, well, they like the game this week. Let's just keep having them play this game. 2 weeks later, maybe they're going to change. And if they stop using it, no matter how great a solution is, the potential will be lost. And so it's about developing innovations that treat the user as the central theme of the innovation, but we don't just stop there. We try to understand over time what keeps the user engaged.
I see. Okay, interesting. So you're the director of the Institute for Digital Medicine at NUS Medicine, right? Which was set up in 2020 to look at digital healthcare solutions for Singapore and beyond, right? You know, tell us, how many digital health solutions has your institute developed and trialed?
Yes, we've got maybe three flagship innovations. One of them is called Curate.ai. We use that to change over time, to dynamically adjust doses, for example, for patients to make sure their treatment is always optimized. We've developed another innovation called Identify, which we develop optimal drug combinations for pandemic preparedness. And then we have Curate.DTX. That's a hybrid of Curate AI, how we optimize dosing, but there's no drug here. It's actually the software. It's a multitasking software. And instead of adjusting the dose, we are adjusting the difficulty. And as each user adjusts and adapts to this game, we suggest different difficulties to optimize their cognitive performance. But the core differentiator of our approaches is we do not use big data. We don't take large amounts of data from many, many patients or users to train an algorithm and then treat the next person that walks in the door with this population data. We use only a person's own data to manage only their own care dynamically, because people change over time, right? And we need to make sure we adjust accordingly. There are trials going on, especially for both the Curate AI for dynamically changing dose in patients, cancer patients, high blood pressure patients. Curate.DTX, we have a trial for brain cancer patients, but for cognitive training remotely. And I think that's an exciting part, an important part of this work, because as patients are home, the ability to digitally administer cognitive training allows people to do this on their own time from the comfort of their own home. I think it's rare for institutes that develop new technology for healthcare to have advanced so many trials to patients. If we look at our oncology studies, hypertension studies, they have varied from tens of patients to more. I will add that just days ago, the World Health Organization released a guidance on how to regulate AI for health. I actually co-led that working group. The only real-world use cases of AI in that guidance are from our institute. It's actually Curate and Identify. This was a multinational effort. Ministries, regulators, tech developers from around the world, and working with WHO, we're the only use cases. And I think one of the reasons there is it's rare. It's rare for AI and digital to make it all the way to people from within the walls of academic innovation. And we wanted to show that we could bridge that gap.
Find us on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or via the Google Voice Assistant and Amazon Alexa-enabled devices. And now back to our podcast episode.
Now back to my conversation with Professor Dean Ho, the director of the Institute for Digital Medicine at the NUS Yong Lu Lin School of Medicine. So you mentioned all these, I mean, these are trials, so they're not actually in use right now, right?
Yes, so these are trials, and once we have the proper evidence to seek clearances in terms of as a medical device, for example, we can file for those clearances. There's kind of different types of claims that one can seek. At the same time, I think the natural progression of these innovations is to potentially spin them out into other companies. And we actually are well acquainted with the startup community that's in this space, as well as which innovations have made it to clearance. And some of them have actually provided insights in this book as well.
So you mentioned there are some of these solutions in the market. And then for your institute, you're also trialing some. So what's the difference between those?
I think the approaches are different, but at the same time, some elements are complementary. For example, if there's a DTX that's, say, either on the market or being set up by a company for trial, it might be completely based on different video games that are rewards for engaging in healthy habit. There might be other DTX that will be giving health coaching to manage blood sugar better for diabetics using a unique software platform. Our DTX, however, is a broader platform. So if we say Curate, we can optimize doses for cancer patients. Curate, we can optimize doses for high blood pressure patients. Curate, we can use to optimize the right difficulty levels of a game to help improve cognitive performance. That approach actually might be adaptable to DTX that are out there already, because there's this prolonged question of what's the right dose a person using any DTX should get. Should it be every day for 20 minutes? Should it be every day for 30 minutes? And within the game itself, or whatever the solution is, if there's a difficulty level or an intensity of the training, what's the right intensity? In traditional medicine, whether it's a pill or whether it's DTX, there's this notion of let's give everybody the highest dose possible and let's see how long they can respond. If we say, look, you're going to engage in a game that's high intensity, highest difficulty, people can be exhausted all the way to the point where they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so the cool part about Curate is it treats everybody discreetly. We're using only their data, and we adjust things like difficulty in time. And so we can say, look, with enough data on this user, tomorrow they should train at higher difficulty. And with that, their performance will actually be better. But maybe a couple of days later, we should actually drop it a little bit and they'll still improve at the lower difficulty level. That is hyper-personalization. And that we can actually partner with other DTX platforms out there to maybe even make theirs even more effective or even more personalized.
Can you explain, like, very simply how this works?
Sure. Curate AI is something that we kind of introduced into the ecosystem since about 2018 here. And what we simply showed back in the day using neural networks, using AI, we discovered that biology, a human, a patient, when you kind of calibrate each person with different difficulties, whether or different doses, high dose, low dose, middle dose, as long as you let a person see different difficulties or doses, and you then measure their unique response at those different levels of dose or difficulty, we can create this profile that we call an avatar. We actually call it a digital avatar. It's like a curve. And that curve is unique to every single person that undergoes this calibration. It can be a blood pressure patient, can be a DTX patient, can be a cancer patient, can be a diabetic. As we each see different doses, we all respond differently. Once we make this curve, this avatar, and it's not a lot of data, a few data points, 3, 4, 5 data points, we will know which dose to give to that person the next day to keep their performance optimized. And then with that single data point, we adjust the curve, then we'll know what to give them the next day. Let's say if it's a game, we have somebody play a game at a very high intensity, very high difficulty, they'll get a score. That's the outcome. Let's see how they score at this difficulty level. Then let's have them play at a slightly less difficult level. Let's measure the score. Then let's have them play at a very easy level. Let's measure the score. And we're all different. We're all different from each other, but we're different from ourselves over time. And so just because a game is very difficult for somebody that day, it doesn't mean their score is going to be the lowest at that time point. It might even be better. And so as we study how each person is given a treatment at a different dose or difficulty, and we see how they respond. It can be a blood marker if it's a cancer patient. It can be a score on a video game. We use this data to build this curve. And it's literally like a parabola. We have this kind of saying, we're all parabolas, right? It's a little U-shaped curve. Everybody's curve looks different from each other, and our own curves change over time as we keep engaging with this. So we'll always know what the right dose or difficulty is for that person in kind of a longitudinal manner.
Right. So let's talk about the future. You know, how do you see DTX changing the healthcare industry? I mean, is it going to be a future where, you know, if I go to the doctor for certain conditions, what I get, it's an app, you know, rather than like a pill?
Yes, I think one of the most compelling ways DTX can change healthcare is to decentralize parts of it that can be remotely delivered. If we think about healthcare costs and we think about the traditional approach of patients always going to a healthcare facility to receive care, I think the ability to remotely deliver will be important. And in some cases, there may be solutions where instead of a pill, they'll be prescribed an app. And in some cases, to help a patient use a pill more effectively, they will get an app with the pill. It'll almost be like a combination therapy. And that also is important because if a patient's not going to stick with using a pill at home, they're probably going to end up needing to come in to see the doctor at some point anyways because they're not adhering to their treatment plan. So if our intent is to allow the patient more empowerment to stay home, to have more control over their care, and an app will help them do that, that still benefits, right? So it's not saying the app's got to outcompete the pill. If we can keep people on their regimens longer, more efficiently, that's a win for everybody. That's a win for the healthcare system. It's a win for the healthcare provider. It can change patient loads, but most importantly, it empowers the patient.
Right. Okay. Because earlier I was going to ask you whether you'll add to the depersonalization in the healthcare industry. You're saying no, right? But, you know, to some people, we're talking about digital solutions and they think that when you have tech, it's cool, right? And it might replace, you know, the attention that you get from a real person, from a doctor and nurse.
Yes, I think the goal here for DTX as we know it is to make sure that we actually go the opposite direction. We're hyper-personalizing it. Now that we know how people perform over time, we can actually adjust the treatment accordingly. And because with Curate, we adjust it using only their own data. But some patients will want to see a provider. And that's why for some of these solutions, engaging with the provider via telehealth, for example, is a part of that journey. We know that telehealth has become a vital part of the healthcare workflow. And I think we'll see as time continues to roll on that telehealth will play a supporting role for DTX as well.
Okay. Because in the future, that's what we're going to get, right? Even the hospital is going to be at home.
That's right.
So we're going to see more of these.
That's right.
Right. So before we end, Prof, I wanted to ask you about your own experience because, you know, I saw the patch on your arm. So tell us about the experiments.
Yes. So, you know, I think there's a lot of innovation out there from continuous glucose monitoring to other handheld devices where you can measure different biomarkers from glucose to ketones, et cetera. And I myself have practiced varying forms of intermittent fasting over time and paired that with strength training, with cardio. And also trying to monitor how I respond. And very unexpectedly, I've found that my having access to my own data has helped me adhere to my own fitness plans and my own intermittent fasting regimens. And so it's been a very fun process.
Can you talk about the difference? So like, you know, when you mentioned intermittent fasting, right? Before you track yourself, you know, how was it like? And then after you track yourself?
Yes, I think intermittent fasting, I'll say that when I say fast for 18 hours, I can see fairly clear changes in my biomarkers like ketones, which tells me that, you know, I'm switching between whether it's burning sugar or burning fat. And I think what's really intriguing with all of this is, as I talked about earlier, people change over time. And when we think about this for patients, I think that the changing over time element is still being understood and adapted in the healthcare setting. And I look at my own data, I can say, look, in the morning after I wake up, my ketones are very high. I'm fasted. After I work out, my ketones drop because I release sugar from the workout. And then if I kind of wait for the rest of the day before I eat again, my ketones go up again. So I can see how I'm just changing so much over the day, right? And then if I say mimic this a month later, my responses will still be different. I am my own validation that people change over time. And so treatment, or not even treatment, how we kind of try to optimize ourselves should change in parallel. When I first started collecting my own data and it was feeding into my phone, I was fascinated. I was like, I've never seen how I respond. And now that it's feeding back to me, it allows me insights to see what I should do next. I think it's not practical to put two wearables or three wearables on every single person, having them sticking their fingers 10 times a day. It's about getting the right learnings, getting the right feedback, and then eventually kind of de-technifying the process so that it's simple lifestyle changes that can help the community at scale. And my goal is to, you know, once we kind of go through the necessary approvals, is to kind of share the experience. Everybody's experience is different, right? That this is only a single person experience. Just my own learnings, I think, will be hopefully helpful to the community in terms of how we try to even gamify or empower ourselves to even learn from ourselves what keeps us motivated to stick with something. Hopefully it'll be helpful.
Right. Thank you very much for your time, Prof.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's a wrap for Health Check, a podcast series by The Straits Times. I'm Joyce Teo. Don't forget to share this podcast episode with your friends and family. If you'd like to read my articles, we have links in the podcast text description below.
That was a podcast by The Straits Times. Send your feedback to podcast@sph.com.sg. Find us on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or via the Google Voice Assistant and Amazon Alexa-enabled devices. For more podcasts by The Straits Times, The Business Times, and Money FM 89.3, you can also download the Audio by SPH app. That's AWEDIO.